Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho. Welcome to the show where we interview legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. John Lodge is the bass guitarist, vocalist, and songwriter for the iconic rock band The Moody Blues. Songwriter of such mega Moody Blues hits, Ride My Seesaw, I'm Just a Singer in a Rock and Roll Band, Isn't Life Strange, my favorite, and many more. Lodge has been performing and recording with the Moody Blues for more than five decades, selling more than 70 million albums. Lodge has been voted one of the top 10 most influential bass players on the planet and has been the recipient of many awards, including ASCAP, American Society of Composers and Publishers, for outstanding contribution to music, and inducted into the Hollywood Walk of Fame, to name just a few. The Moody Blues have released 15 studio albums and countless compilations, and John has also released three solo albums, Natural Avenue in 77, 10,000 Light Years Ago in 2015, and his current Live from Birmingham, the 10,000 Light Years Tour. He's also released the duo album The Blue Jays in 1975 with Justin Hayward, and they were voted the top duo for the year. 2017 saw the 50th anniversary of the Moody Blues from Days of Future Past, and to celebrate, John and the Moody Blues embarked on a very special tour that included a complete performance of this iconic and groundbreaking album. The tour continued in January 2018 with the fourth Moody Blues cruise dates in the USA and finishing with a residence at the Wynn in Las Vegas. This celebratory concert, Days of Future Past Live, was filmed in Toronto. It's also currently being shown on PBS as part of their Great Performances program and has now been released as a DVD, reaching the top of the U.S. DVD charts. On April 14th, 2019, the Moody Blues were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as part of the Class of 2018. Please welcome singer, songwriter, bassist for Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, the Moody Blues, Mr. John Lodge. Hello, John.
Hi, Ray. Well, what an intro that. Well, thank you very much.
Well, actually, I had to cut it short.
You've done brilliant.
So many things.
Well done.
First of all, congratulations on your Rock Hall honors. I watched it on television, and you guys were, you were overdue, actually. You should have had this done many, many years ago, but congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. But, it's nice to get it now, It's, I did get into rock and roll for any awards, but it really is nice to have people, vote for you. And I feel really, really pleased for all our fans because they've been the, the stalwart people, chasing this for us and saying, you should be in. And I think they did it, along with, of course, a lot of radio people, a lot of DJs in the USA. So thank you to everyone. It's brilliant.
Yeah, we love you guys. Moody Blues is one of those bands that, everything you do is gold, basically. Every song you put out, you guys are so talented. It's amazing.
It's just something I love, something we love. And, we've been very fortunate to have you know, American radio take us to their heart, to be honest.
Right.
And it's just been a wonderful ride for us, you know, to release an album and then hear it, you know, on radio. I mean, it's still one of those magic moments when you hear one of your songs being played, you know. It's, you know, when you think of yourself being sort of 12 years of age, picking up a guitar for the first time, thinking, I wonder where this is going to take me.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. It's just it's a dream come true, basically. One Michael Pinder didn't play when you guys played on stage, right, at the hall? He wasn't performing?
Yeah, no, Mike wasn't. You know, Mike was with me. You know, we speak together all the while, Mike and I.
Right.
And but, you know, he's been living in California for many years, and we weren't too sure exactly what was really going to happen at the Hall of Fame, at the ceremony, you know. So I think we prepared the show, you know, the songs that we've been doing over the last few years for that show, you know. So we were always trying to be prepared for whatever you do in life. But it was lovely to have Mike standing there with us, you know. It was great.
You know, it's wonderful to see bands perform live at the Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and show all the people today, you know, and people on mainstream radio and whatever, what a real band sounds like. You know.
Well, I'm glad you said that, not me.
Well, you know, it's like, yes, you know, I'm a big fan of the Moody Blues. Progressive rock is my thing, and when Yes performed, I was so happy to see that. I've had the guys from Heart on the show, and to see the, you know, the original Heart perform. I mean, you know, it's wonderful. And if it takes the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to do it, then, you know, God bless it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it is about rock and roll. You know, you just mentioned Yes. You know, next year in February, I'm on the Prog Rock Cruise with Yes.
We're
going down to Florida, you know, Key West, and then down to Mexico from Florida, leaving Tampa. So I have a great time on the Prog Rock Cruise, you know, and it's great because, you know, Yes, we all grew up together, you know, and the music industry, from the artist point of view, from a band point of view, is very parochial. It's very small, really. And, you know, our paths cross. We don't see each other very often. But when our paths cross, it's as though it was yesterday when we saw them wherever we saw them before, you know. So it's always great.
Yeah, these cruises are like a reunion for you guys, just to get together and, you know, have a few beers and talk about the old days, you know. It must be wonderful.
It's great, you know, for the fans it's great because it's like a floating festival, you know, where we're all there for one reason only, the music.
Yeah, I call it Woodstock on the high seas.
Well, yeah, on the high seas, but yeah, exactly.
I want to plug some of your dates. You're going to be doing your solo gig, I guess, beginning October 12th at the City Winery in Tennessee. Is that where you're starting?
Yeah, we start in Nashville. Looking forward to that. I love Nashville. Mm-hmm. And really excited about that. And we wander through. And I've just added two more dates today
well.
Good. Yeah, one in at the end of the tour. So we'll be in Cleveland, you know, home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And then I'm going to be in Cincinnati as well. So that's two more concerts. Yeah, I'm really pleased.
Yeah, October 14th, you'll be in my old stomping grounds. I grew up in the D.C. area, so you'll be in Washington, D.C. at that City Winery on the 14th.
Yeah.
You'll be in Sellersville, Pennsylvania on the 15th. You'll also be in the City Winery in New York on the 17th. Flying Monkey in Plymouth.
Yeah, the Flying Monkey.
Yeah, I like that name.
It's good.
You'll be in Norfolk, Connecticut, Infinity Music Hall and Bistro. That'll be on the 20th. And then I got you in Greenwich, Rhode Island, on the 21st. You don't have much time in between, do you?
No, there's a lot of traveling as well. And, but I think if you're a musician, you need to be a gypsy as well. To be honest, you need to want to travel. You need to want to go and see places. And I've been very fortunate that I do enjoy that. You know, and I see places across America, and I think I'm coming back here to investigate. Mm-hmm. And it's been a wonderful journey for me across America, all across America, everywhere I go. I find something so interesting, you know.
Then back in Vegas with the Moody Blues, September 19th through October 6th at the Encore Theater at Wynn in Vegas. So you'll be doing some dates there as well. And then, of course, you got the cruise, February 4th through 9th, leaving out of Tampa, and you'll be in Cozumel. And my friend Steve Hackett will be there with you as well. He's been on the show.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
I was very fortunate to interview both Ray Thomas and Michael Pinder. And probably one of the best interviews I've ever done and enjoyed was with Ray Thomas.
Yeah.
Ray talked about you a lot. You know, you guys go way back. I think since you were like 14 years old or something like that, right?
Yeah, 14. And, you know, I taught Ray how to drive even. Can you believe it?
Really?
No, he was older than me, but I passed my test first. yeah, we had a lot of fun. We had great times. And, we were very close, very close.
I want to read you something from that last interview I had. It's a little lengthy, but I think you'll appreciate it. This is Ray talking about you. Do you mind if I read that real quick?
No, not at all.
Okay, it says, I worked with John a couple of weeks before Christmas on an album he's making, and I was in the studio with him. I've known John since he was 14 years old, and I was 15. He doesn't like people to know that we're close in age, so John lies. He wrote a song for his grandson. He's called John Henry after a railroad man in the 60s. Ray began to sing John Henry. Was a railroad. He did. He sang that to me. He worked from 6 to 5. He says John Henry was a railroad man. He worked from 6 to 5. Okay. So anyway, John came around and said, I've written a song, and I'd like you to put flute on it. I went into the studio and brought my bass flute and C flute. John hadn't worked in that studio with a producer before. I had, so I introduced them. But it was like we were there yesterday. John was sitting there on a stool with his guitar on his lap, and I got in there and set my flutes up, and we played the track. I told John that I had no idea to put bass flute on it, and then play the C flute over the top of the bass flute. John picked around on this guitar and said, I think that's going to work. So I said, well, I tell you, the best thing we can do, let's effing do it. And we did it. But it was just like we worked together like we used to. After he put some strings on it, John followed me home and asked me what I thought of it. I said, it's your song, but if I was you, I would go for it. It could sell the album 10,000 light years ago for you. And so that's what we did. John and I had a wonderful day, although it was pissing down rain and the weather was crap. John is doing a lot of recording in Florida. I think he wants me to do another flute job on another song. Anyway, we took a few photographs together, and when we left, it was raining, and the studio was at the bottom of the producer's garden. So John was holding the big old umbrella because I don't get around too fast on my legs. And he was also holding my hand. I had my stick, and John's holding the umbrella for the both of us. I said, if somebody had taken a photograph from the back, it would have made a wonderful shot. So we're holding hands as we walked away from the studio. He started laughing. And he says, John came out with the most stupid thing when he got home. His wife and daughter were there, and they were waiting to see how we got along together. So John rushed in there and said, sounds just like us. It sounds just like us. I said, you silly son, of course it does. It's still us. Does that sound like Ray?
that's exactly. You've just transported me back to exactly that place. Can you believe? And it's everything there was exactly right. Everything was there, And yeah, we did. We were like Lauren Hardy coming back up that walk. but yeah,
somebody should
great
have taken
times.
A picture of that. Yeah, he loved you. The way you talked, he went on and on about you. And of course, him and Mike Wolf, you know, they were our best mates as well. So
yeah, well, you know, the three of us, you know, Ray and I had a band for 4 years called Al Riot and the Rebels.
Yep.
And part of that time, you know, Mike played keyboards for us as well. So, you know, we go back and, you know, we've lived our youth together, you know, and we learned a lot of things together from each other, which was, you know, musically and as friends. And so it's just been wonderful. And, you know, Ray played me one of the best compliments I've ever had, really, from someone. When
really?
I played the album, which I just recorded, the reason I recorded the album, it's at Birmingham Town Hall. And Birmingham Town Hall was where I saw Buddy Holly when I was 12 years of age. And I sat in the front seat, front row of the Circle. And I said to my agent, I want to finish my tour at Birmingham Town Hall. And I want to stand on the stage and look up to that, you know, that front row of the Circle.
Sure.
And think, sure. Yeah, there's a young Johnny Lodge up there looking down at Buddy Holly. And I thought, I wonder if there's a young Johnny Lodge up there looking down at me who may one day go, yeah, I want to be a musician, you know. But Ray was, what I'm coming to is that Ray was very poorly, you know, very poorly. And they never said anything to me. And can you believe he got a driver and he drove from Surrey up to Birmingham to come and see me. And he sat in that audience and watched the concert. And that was, to me, just a magic moment from a friend, you know. So it was really something very special, that the effort he put into it when he was not well at all. And it's very special, very special.
The other, I interviewed Michael as well. What I got from Michael's interview, he's a, you know, a big UFO kind of really into the UFO experience, and he actually said he saw a few UFOs in our interview. One of them was in 1966. He said he was with his first band. I don't know if that was his first band, the L. Wright and the Rebels, or was that a different band?
I don't know, but I know Mike and I used to speak about this a lot. We used to spend hours talking about it, you know, and exploring the universe and UFO societies and ancient history, you know, and what part, if any, that, UFOs played in the, you know, the architecture of the ancient world, who knows? And we used to talk about that a lot, you know, and normally just before making an album, because it spread your lateral thinking. Most of the songs we write in the Moody Blues, or the songs I write, I think, there's always like two meanings, and it's really important. You just mentioned the song that I did with Ray, you know. So when I'd written the song, I thought, oh, Ray's got to play on this. He's got to play on this song. And the opening lyric is, just when I thought nothing could get any better than this, you came along like the words of a song, like a song I thought I would never get to write. And, you know, it was about my grandson, but when I thought about it, it was about everything in life. You know, when something happens to you that changes your whole life and you're not expecting it, you know. And I keep trying to say to everyone, you know, never think of the bad things that change in your life. Try and think of the good things. And they will outweigh the bad things, I assure you.
Well, your latest album, 10,000 Light Years Ago, is an incredible album. I really enjoyed it. I think some of my favorites, you know, I love In My Mind. You know, it's mesmerizing, great track. Those Days in Birmingham, you know, that tells it all.
Yeah, it does.
And, of course, Simply Magic was the song you wrote for your grandson. And Michael's on that one, and Ray's on it. They're both on there. How many grandchildren do you have?
Well, just the one. Yeah, just the one. Light of My Life, John Henry. And, soccer player, tennis player. He still wants to beat me at tennis, so that's the problem.
he can't beat you, huh?
Oh, he can, because he can run. He can run faster than I can. But he loves music as well, you know, and it's really great time, beautiful time.
Get Me Out of Here, which is, you know, there's a video on YouTube of Get Me Out of Here. Was that an official video with the cartoon in it, the Astro Boy cartoon?
No, I haven't seen that. I've got to look for that then. No, I haven't seen that.
Get Me Out of Here. It's a cartoon of Astro Boy to the music, and it's actually very, very well done and got a really good response. So,
thank you to whoever did that. I really like that song because it encompasses probably who I am as a songwriter as well, mm-hmm. that song, you know, because, you know, it's the quiet part and the big chorus part and the guitar solo, right. Going to minor chords. I enjoy that.
Love Passed Me By, to me, sounded a little McCartney in that song. You know, it sounded like a Paul McCartney song almost. I really, really enjoyed that.
Thank you. Give you a quick history on that song. In the 60s, we used to tour in France with Stefan Grappelli, who was, you know, with Django Reinhardt. Stefan Grappelli was an incredible violinist, jazz violinist. And I thought, one day I'm going to write a song that is for a Stefan Grappelli type person. And I was playing my guitar one day and that song appeared. And I thought, yes, this is the Stefan Grappelli song. This is the 10,000 Light Years Ago song.
And then you Drive Me Crazy is an old-time rock and roll tune, which I really enjoyed. It's like you brought all your heroes back from the you know, the old days and put them in this song, which I really liked. Another great track.
Thank you. I got Brian Howe as well to come and sing on that with me from Bad Company. And we had a great time doing that. We had a great time doing the vocals on that song.
The album cover is interesting. It looks like, to me, a city kind of inside like a Mars rover or satellite. Is that right? Is it a city inside that?
It is a city inside
it. Is that Birmingham?
Well, it could be. It could be Birmingham. It could be Birmingham from the future. You know, what I wanted on the sleeve is the idea of 10,000 light years ago. It's something that happened 10,000 light years ago. It's not necessarily here now. You know, when you look up the sky and the stars, when they say something happened 10,000 light years ago. Well, it could have disappeared by now. It may not be there. We may never be able to get there. And so I thought it'd be great to have like a satellite with a little city inside with the glass broken, if you look. You know, it's like the satellite's broken. But is it broken because people have got out and they've landed? Or is it broken because it never went anywhere? And so it was an interesting idea, I thought.
It captures, you know, the eye of a lot of people. You know, it's a really cool album cover. So, you know, that's one thing. You know, that's what sold me a long time ago. But from record albums was the album cover. If I liked the album cover, I'd buy the album. You know, and give it a shot. You know, if you didn't know the artist, that's how I bought my first Supertramp album.
Well, exactly. Listen, I think we all did that. I used to look go searching for sleeves. And there was, I thought if someone's put the effort into the sleeve, they'll probably put the effort into the music as well. And it wasn't just a case of slapping a photograph of the artist or the band on the front with the title. It was something more than that, you know. And that's exactly how I was looking for, you know, all the Jefferson Starship and Canned Heat and everything, you know, all the bands. It was just a wonderful time looking for different artists.
You know, there's something very special about British rock, you know, and progressive rock. You know, to me, prog rock is everything, you know, and that was invented by the Brits, guaranteed, definitely. When I think of some of the songs that come from Prague, you know, you think of England and the all the history that comes through the songs and through the lyrics many years ago, you know. I don't know if you know where I'm coming from with this, but you don't get that from, like, you know, an American artist might, you know maybe a little bit more of the old blues and things like that, but, you know, the Brits have so that the history is amazing. How many years you guys go back, and it's shown from, like, through the lyrics and through the music. It's you know, I love it.
I think you're right. I mean, you know, America gave England rock and roll. There's no doubt about it. You know, I mean, we were well behind. We had a thing called skiffle, which was basically.
Yeah.
Acoustic sort of up-tempo sort of country blues in a way, but it wasn't, but it was similar. And but America had rock and roll, major rock and roll, you know, when we think about the guys coming over, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, Gene Vincent, Eddie Cochran, and you bought something that was so new, exciting. And what we did, we learned all those songs. We learned all those songs. And, you know, I'm at parties now, you know, with a few friends, pick out a guitar, and those are the songs I'll sing to everyone. Because everyone seems to join in. It doesn't matter what the age is. People seem to know what the hooks are, you know. But I think once we'd learned those songs, we started to investigate how they worked and how could we make things different that was ours, you know. One of them was tempo changes, one of them was key changes, and one of them, of course, was adding chord sequences that no one had thought of before. And I think once we started exploring all of that, then prog rock came out of that, because it was just a complete extension of trying to find new ways, or more exciting ways, not just new, but more exciting ways of actually playing your music, you know.
I still say prog rock is in your DNA, though. You know, because you know you can hear, you know, like for instance, the Renaissance. You know, you can hear that Renaissance period. You know, you can hear the days of the castles and kings and queens. It's in it's in your DNA. You know, it's your history.
Yeah, you're right. It's because we brought up reading all these books and reading history and seeing all these castles in the air and you know, going to see King Arthur and Guinevere and Camelot and Stonehenge, and there's a fascination with all of those things, you know.
Yes,
and
there is.
It really fast, and I think we put that all into, we did put all of those things into our music.
Have you watched Game of Thrones?
Yes, I have. Yes, I'm Game of Thrones. Of course, I have. You know, and you know, they're all exciting. You know, they're mm-hmm. the Vikings. You know, and then you can come right up to date with Peaky Blinders. You know, so. They've all got an incredible historical pedigree, and you're right. What you just said, you're right. It was in the DNA. I'm sure you're right.
You know, I like to go off topic. I don't like to ask questions like everybody else does. And I've interviewed Ian Anderson a couple of times. So I went off totally off topic and asked about his ancestry. We talked religion. We talked politics. And he loves to talk about that kind of stuff. But,
yeah,
you know, I was figuring, man, Ian Anderson, I mean, his DNA has got to be awesome. You know, maybe, there's some knights and who knows what's in his past. He said no. He said there was there were probably a lot of Vikings.
probably. But it's an interesting with all this ancestry.com, it's really interesting to sort of find out where you're from and what's influenced you all the while, and who knows, you may be reenacting something from your DNA that you were doing somewhere along in your DNA 400 years ago. Who knows?
Have you ever checked your ancestry to see how far back you can go?
Yeah, I mean, we got one line that went back to like 1300, but whether it was my direct line, we're not too certain. But the people said it was, and it was really funny because a guy called Roger de Lodger. Not John Lodge, but Roger de Lodge. So he's probably French or Norman.
Right.
But the Normans, of course, were Vikings. So my DNA does show that half of me, I'm from Viking stock anyway. So I'm from Scandinavia as well. So, perhaps the Vikings were wonderful people for traveling all around the world. And as a musician, you've got to be able to do that.
Oh, sure. That's interesting, I love to hear about the history of people. It's just fascinating. I interviewed Annie Haslam, from Renaissance.
Yeah.
I know Annie. And she said she went to somebody, it was in a castle in England, and they could look up your past. Other lives, you're reincarnated, and she says she was reincarnated. She was Mary, Queen of Scots, at one time.
the thing is that I know at Hampton Court you could do that. A regression, I think it's called. Yeah,
right.
at Hampton Court, you used to be able to go there, and there's somebody in that area used to do that, and. I was going to do it one time, but I thought, I might turn up with somebody I don't actually like. I thought, I don't really want to do that.
Do you believe that we've been visited by intelligent life forms from another world? You think that has happened?
Well, the water thing about it, I think the answer is probably yes, because I do study ancient history. Mm-hmm. Really ancient history,
really?
And I'm talking pre-Egyptians. And if you look into the Sumerian people, who were pre-Egyptian, they already had electricity, they already knew, named all the stars, they also knew which way every planet revolved, and they also knew that one planet revolved the wrong way round. How would they know that? I've no idea.
Impossible.
It's impossible. And they also knew about Pluto. And we didn't know about that because we only found that 20 years ago or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they also described coming through the Milky Way, how you would actually come by all the different planets. And that's the Sumerian people. How on earth did they know that? So I have no idea.
Yeah, I think what do you call them, the crop circles? I think that's amazing. That, you can't tell me all those crop circles were made by man. And there's
No, I can't believe it. Not when they turn up overnight. Not when they turn up overnight. And they're complete. They're complete, I have no idea. I have no idea. But I tell you the one thing I will put forward, and everyone who listens to your show should think about this.
Okay.
If you landed on the moon in 1968, why haven't we been back?
True.
The technology is so easy now to do that. Why haven't we been back? And, you know, it'd be great if someone could answer that.
But, you know, I believe that, you know, the astronauts say there's something else out there, you know. You know, Frank Borman believes in it. And if the astronauts believe there, you know, that there are other lives out there, I believe it. I mean, who better?
Well, you know, the amazing thing for me is that I you know, I've got a huge telescope and I look at the stars and everything else, and I show people different things. And at the moment, Mars is closest than it's been for a long, long time. So Mars looks really red. It's great. And Jupiter's up there and Saturn. But when you start looking, you start seeing rockets that are flying around up there. And they're all named. Hmm. And you can go online and check whose rocket it is, and then you can see the space station go by. And you think, just a moment, you know, there's this thing we can't see, and there's people on there having lunch. And it's a matter-of-fact thing for them. So probably if you reverse that and you could see back to Earth, you think, just a minute, we can't all come from this small little place called Earth, can we, you know?
Right.
And so it must be interesting for an astronaut, really, to actually come to terms with when they come back to Earth. So I asked Buzz Aldrin that question once, but, you know, we disappeared on a different wavelength after that. It's interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah, I watch all those shows. You know, I've got Roku, and I, you know, get HBO Now and Netflix and all that, and I watch all those documentaries, and it's incredible. I just wish one day we'll know the truth. I really hope.
I don't think we ever will, to be honest. There's obviously probably a million reasons why not. Who knows? But that's the question I always ask everyone, you know, when people ask me, do I believe that? I just say, if we went in 1968, you know, basically on a, you know, 2 gigabyte computer and a rocket, now what we've got, we can do today, and we've never been back, you know. And I don't understand why people haven't flown by all the debris that was left on the moon and photographed it and see what's happened to it, you know. I would want to know. When they left all the moon rovers up there, I'd love to see what they look like now, 40 years later, you know, whether they've rusted, they've become something else, whether they disappeared. It'd be interesting, you know. I'd have thought everyone would love to know about that.
I guess the latest now is that the Mars, the rover or whatever, is lost because it's covered with dust. They can't find it. Yeah,
but the moon is so much closer. You know, if you could build a space station, which we've got floating around the Earth, and people lived on there quite happily, I'd have thought you'd be able to build the same thing on the moon and live quite happily and come back. At least you could get back. If you go to Mars, we can't get back, you know. And at least go to the moon, we could get back. And with 3D printers and everything, we could take everything with us.
Someone else
must know the answer to all that. I'm just a musician. I'm just a singer in a rock and roll band. What do I know?
That's funny. Well, NASA was talking about, launching a rocket to Mars from the moon. That's on their website. That's something they were thinking about.
But they've got to get to the moon.
Why haven't we been back? You know, I heard rumors, too, about, you know, the astronauts saw something else on the moon. Like, it might have been somebody else visited the moon besides us. Maybe that's a reason why they're not coming back. Who knows?
Well, the other thing is, which is interesting, I've never found an answer. I've looked for this everywhere. We call it the dark side of the moon, but the other side of the moon isn't dark.
Right.
It's only dark from this side. Why haven't we got photographs from that side? We only ever have photographs of this side, which we can see anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be great to have photographs from the other side.
True. And like you said, we have the technology to get it done.
Yeah.
You know, why don't we?
I mean, there's so much there, so much there to talk. You could talk hours about it. You know.
It's interesting though. I like talking about it because there's so much we don't know in the universe, and it's so massive.
Yeah.
You know,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I talked to Chris Squire about the same thing, same subject. He told me he really believes that aliens are us from the future. He wrote a song about it, too.
Yeah, it may be right, you know. Who knows? You know, we have no idea. Best thing is keep your eyes open. That's all you can do.
Yeah, have your phone ready to take that picture.
Absolutely. Absolutely, especially nowadays.
Yeah, I know Michael's ready.
Yeah,
he's always looking out.
He is. He is. I mean, I had people computers at my house years and years ago, and they said, "I said, what are you doing here?" You know, and they said, "Well, you're going to be flying the spaceship that saves the Earth." And I said, "Well, I don't think so. I don't actually like flying." It sort of put a stop to that, but they said, no, you will do that. Anyway, but who knows?
One of my favorite songs that you've written is Isn't Life Strange. Can you tell me a little bit about how you came across, you know, writing that?
Yeah, a friend of mine was Lionel Bart. Lionel Bart was an incredible songwriter. He wrote Oliver and so many songs, so many early English rock and roll songs, Living Doll by Cliff Richard, and so many songs. And I was at his house one day, and he said, listen to this piano. It's called a Damon, a baby grand piano. And he said, it's got a beautiful tone with the right amount of harmonics. And I played it, you know, I'm not really a pianist, but I can write on piano, and I really liked it. So I actually ordered one of these pianos, and it was delivered to my house, and I was having dinner one night with some friends, and while we were talking, I could hear this melody in my head, and I got up from the table and said, excuse me, and you know, I went into my drawing room, my front room where the piano was, and I wrote, although it only had one lyric, I actually wrote the basic song in about 10 minutes, and it was Isn't Life Strange, Isn't Life Strange, Isn't Life Strange. And I went back into our friends who were having dinner, and I said, I think I've written a song. I said, but I'm going to play it in the morning to see if it's right. It's always best to play a song in the morning because then you know whether it's right or wrong. And I played it in the morning, and that was it. And I just sat down and wrote the rest of the lyrics. And we recorded it. Mike played a pedal harmonium, which I've still got it. And it's a pedal harmonium. Mother used to play it all the churches in the West in America, you know, the little harmonium, you pedal away. And if you listen to the original recording, if you listen quietly, you can hear the pedal going up and down. It's really interesting. You can hear the boom, boom, boom of the pedal, the mic playing the pedal. But that's where I wrote the song. It was But Isn't Life Strange? It just captured me, the whole thing, you know, the lyric about it.
You know, when my day's going a little weird, or I see weird things on television or whatever, I think of that song. You know, it helps me get through life.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Yeah. It really makes sense.
Yeah, brilliant.
Well, you're you're an intelligent guy. You have a degree in mechanical engineering. I know you wanted to design cars at one time. And do you have a collection of cars? Are you
I used to, but I'll tell you one quick story which I enjoy. When we lived in America, when we recorded the Octave album, and we're living in America, lived there for 18 months in Brentwood in Los Angeles. Right. And I bought a Lincoln Continental two-door. Mm-hmm. And we were coming back to England. And I said to my family, I said, you know what we should do? We should drive Route 66 all the way back. And instead of going up to St. Louis, we'll go to Nashville. And that's what we did. We did spend 2 weeks driving. This is 1978. We drove all across Route 66. And it was a brilliant time, brilliant time. And I came back on the QE2, actually, and brought the car back with me to England. And I've still got it today. I don't drive it very often. Yeah, I don't drive it very often, but it still lovingly sits in my garage here in England. And because it had so many memories of driving across America and the people we met, it was just a wonderful time. But I've loved cars since I was sort of 7 years. I think I drove my first one when I was like 7 years of age. I was just fascinated by cars, absolutely fascinated. I still am. I will drive everywhere. I drive all across Europe, and when I'm in America, if I can, I'll drive everywhere.
Do you race at all, or you just like to drive?
No, I just like to cruise. No, I don't like to race. I did some hot rod racing. We actually recorded a song called "Sitting at the Wheel," where driving a hot rod car or a dog, whatever they call it, fast car, around the racetrack, and that was good fun. But no, the speed part doesn't really. It's the it's just the enjoyment of driving and seeing places. I enjoy that.
And of course, now does your daughter still run the wine business? I know she was in.
Yeah, she does. We'll be doing that on the cruise. I always like to do a wine and music event where, people could have a taste the wine and everything, and I'll get two or three of the guys from my band, and we just do like a semi-acoustic version of different songs, and just have a nice time on the cruise. It's always a great time, And I'll be doing that on the cruise to the edge of February. So looking forward to that.
And when you're not playing music, you play golf.
not too much. But I enjoy golf. I like the competition. I don't like friendly golf. I'm not really one of those people who just go and play golf for golf. I like the competition of golf, and it puts me in a different place. I enjoy that.
So you're a serious golfer.
Well, I used to be. but I don't have the time to do it, and I wouldn't want. Yeah. I mean, my life is my family and my music.
Sure.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And the golf is just a part that just adds more to the. It brings more to the party,
Mm-hmm. Have you played with Alice Cooper? He's a great golfer.
Yeah, I played in Alice's competition a couple of times. In actual fact,
really?
The last time was with my friend Glenn Campbell. And we got up on stage, Glenn and I, and played with Alice and played some rock and roll songs and had a great time.
Can you beat Alice on the golf course?
I better not say that.
That's funny. I just had Greg Voltz. From oh my goodness, the Greg X Foltz is his name. He was a guest of mine recently from Petra. I don't know if you remember the band. Yeah, Christian rock band. He was one of the best Christian rock bands out there. I just talked to him yesterday, and he's a big golfer. I think he had a 8 handicap or something like that.
I was down to 8.
You were down to 8 as well. Wow.
Yeah. I played against Army Palmer, and I played with Arnold.
Wow.
Yeah, Greg Norton. I was captain of the Great Britain team when we went and played Arnold Palmer's team at the Bay Hill, so a few years ago. And I belong to some charities, and the charities are really good at raising money, you know, through golf, you know, for people, and it's good times, good times.
Do you play? Have you played in any of the Florida courses?
Yeah, I played the Green Monster. What was it called? The Blue Monster. Played the Blue Monster. Yeah, I played a lot of courses in Florida. Orlando. Played lots of courses in Orlando. Bay Hill, of course. I think I'd have to write them down, and then I'd remember all the names.
Does Graham play golf too, or just no?
He used to, but he doesn't now.
Yeah. He does anymore,
As soon as they moved him onto the blue tees, he thought that was enough.
John, here's your final question. This is a question I ask everybody, and I get some interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Buddy Holly, full stop.
Buddy Holly, yep.
Yeah, full stop. As I said earlier, you know, I was totally fascinated, besotted. I bought everything that Buddy Holly's ever done, all the demo tapes I've got, you know. It just came, I mean, you know, like 3 years of a musical life, basically, which changed the lives of so many English people. Musicians, you know, he really did Buddy Holly, and but to be able to have seen him live on stage, just amazing. And yeah, I'd have gone on there, I'd have played tambourine for him if he wanted me to, just to be there, you know.
That's very rare to see him in concert. Very, very rare. Not too many people can say that.
I don't know many people could actually say that, but it was just, I've still got the program. Can you believe
really? You're kidding me. Wow.
The original program. And,
that's going to be worth the money.
Yeah, that would be the person, because just to see how he put these songs together with the way he put the chord sequences together, it's just amazing. Wonderful. Wonderful.
Did you get to meet Buddy?
No, I didn't. I didn't, unfortunately.
Trini Lopez.
Go
ahead.
Sorry. No, he came to a concert. We were in Palm Springs a couple of years ago, and we had a great time with Trini. Yeah, really nice man.
Yeah, he was asked to be in the Crickets at one time after Buddy passed away. But he knew Buddy. Yeah, he had some good stories about him.
I'm sure he did. You know, Bobby V, of course, you do. And I met Bobby V, so that was interesting. You know, nice guy, nice family. All his sons were in his band. You know, so it's great.
Have you written a book or going to write a book?
No, I haven't. I always think there's another page coming.
you're not done yet.
No, I'm not. I've got so much to do. Now, if anybody wants to know, they can just look at everything I've said over the years, and they make it up themselves. You know.
Yeah.
That's for
John.
Me.
I want to thank you so much, man, for being on the show today.
Hey, thank you very much. Thank you for the support and everything else. It's amazing, and I look forward to seeing everybody on the road.
Yes, it's going to be wonderful. I hope you stop in Florida eventually.
I'm hoping to be there next year in February.
Okay, you'll definitely be on the cruise.
After the cruise, I'd like to do that.
Is the cruise sold out? Usually those things sell out very quick. Do you know if this one sold out? You know,
from day one, I've never ever asked how we're selling.
Yeah, it's always
even when
sold
I was 30,
out.
I've never, you know, is it? Oh, brilliant, wonderful.
Yeah, you got to book these things like, you know, a couple of years in advance. That's
yeah,
the only
I'm
way
sure.
to get in. Yeah. Thanks again, John.
Thank
God
you,
bless you, man.
The best.
Thank
you for the
we'll
interview.
Hopefully see you in Florida.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Good luck on the road. Bye-bye now.
Same. Bye.
Purchased 10,000 Light Years Ago by John Lodge at Amazon.com. For more information about John, go to johnlodge.com. For more information about the Moody Blues, visit www.moodybluestoday.com. Very special thanks to Emily Lodge and Chipster PR and Consulting for arranging this interview with John Lodge, and of course the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me directly at theRayShashoShow@gmail.com. Don't forget, purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business. You will love it. It's available now at Amazon.com. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.